On today's 51%, we speak with one of the people responsible for bringing Hollywood to upstate New York.
I'm kind of like the worker bee. I stay behind the scenes.
And we meet a producer of HBO's new series, The Gilded Age, which was filming this spring in New York's Capital Region.
Oh my God, I can't wait for people to see the show.
I'm Jackie Orchard, and this is 51%.
We've got Nathan Lane, and we've got Christine Baranski, and we've got Cynthia Nixon, and we've got Danae Benton, and it's a fantastic, a lot of Tony winners or nominees, I think.
Holly Ryman is a producer on HBO's new series, The Gilded Age.
It's set in 1882. It's sort of the beginning of, this sort of amazing time in history, which quite admittedly I didn't know a whole lot about before I got involved in this project, where, industry and, railroads and all of these businesses were sort of just like taking off, and they became people with an enormous amount of wealth. So there were not a lot of checks and balances yet, and it was just like insane wealth. So they were building mansions and they were making homes, and there was new money and old money. So that is sort of a loose premise of the show. Is there is a family that has new money and they're ready to be in society and do all the things, and then there's a family that's from the old money and they're very quite proud of that, and they're not really ready to accept the new folks. So there's a little bit of drama there.
Ryman and I are sitting in Riverfront Park in Troy, New York. They filmed just a block away, transforming storefronts into hat boutiques and cigar shops from 1800s New York City. Ryman says the scenery was her favorite part of filming.
It's gorgeous. Oh my God, I can't wait for people to see the show. It's just the costumes, the sets. It's just literally stunning. It's really, really beautiful.
And the best part?
The horses were one of my favorite things. They're just beautiful. And I mean, we were really lucky. We've been working with this group of folks, wranglers and horses and carriages, from the beginning. And they've been fantastic. And like, you get to know their names and you get to know their personalities. And, they're our actors too.
Ryman says Troy was the perfect location to shoot.
We were scouting different locations, including Albany, but Troy just has a lot of architecture from the period that is largely untouched, and that just is the main reason. New York City, Brooklyn, those places, it's so hard to navigate through them anymore, and there's a lot of modern pieces mixed in. It's just hard to find those chunks of time and space that are controllable and that look proper. So really here it was, and the city has been amazing as far as like helping us lock down streets so we can run horses and carriages and put dirt down and do all the things we need to do to make everything safe for everybody and still make it look good. Take down signs. I mean, we had to, there's a lot of work that went into it, and the city was really fantastic. So definitely happy we came here and got to see all the beautiful houses, and, they have to be touched up a little bit from VFX here and there, but for the most part, the structures are just gorgeous.
Ryman does not have a cameo in The Gilded Age, but if you look closely, she does have her own sign in the scenery.
Sometimes we sneak names into the signs for the crew, like only the crew really knows. So if like the names around a town on the signs are a lot of crew members' last names.
Ryman is a line producer.
I'm basically in charge of the budget, overseeing the budget, the schedule, and sort of the management of the people.
Ryman says the COVID-19 pandemic is a tough time to be running logistics for a major HBO series.
How to do it safely, getting air purifiers and checking people in, and what different things can we do to make, separating people 6 feet apart at lunch so they can take their masks off. And that in and of itself, just the amount of space we needed to get people ready and to feed people, was tremendous. We had to have huge tents like almost everywhere we went, because you would cram people together on a folding table before, and it didn't matter how many people were sitting together. And now we had to have thousands and thousands of extra square feet of space, which not only takes time and energy to find, but money to pay for it.
Ryman says the cost of shutting down production is astronomical.
At any moment, somebody could get knocked out. And if it's an actor, you try to shoot anything you can shoot without them. But, we have a couple of characters who are in most everything. And so if you lose one of them for 2 weeks, you would have to shut down. It's millions of dollars.
Ryman says they went above and beyond CDC recommendations.
A lot of testing, cast tested every day they worked and before they worked. And then also any rehearsal, they would wear a mask. Like anytime we would travel them in vans that had plastic shields and we wouldn't let more than two people in the van and like, the drivers were tested.
Ryman says there's no one conventional way to land this kind of job.
I personally came up through the production office, so I came up more from by chance, but I came up that way and sort of learned how to manage the office, and then I became a production manager, which was really more of a, day-to-day detail, managing the crew and the money and the equipment and things like that, and then went into producing from there.
Ryman went to college at George Washington University in D.C. in 1990.
Got a theater degree, and then a couple years in theater was just sort of a rough go financially, like waitressing during the day, doing, theater at night. And I decided to maybe get into something else in entertainment. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I took a continuing ed program at NYU in film, did that for 3 months, and I thought I wanted to be a director of photography. So I started working low-budget, no-budget shows as a camera assistant.
From there, Ryman got an internship at Castle Rock in an office for a Rob Reiner movie called North in 1993. She says she started to appreciate the business side of showbiz.
They hired me on halfway through. They started paying me as a production assistant. And I just kind of looked down every path that could possibly be. And the only place I wanted to wind up was producer. So it wasn't a straight shot, but, I knew that. So I kind of enjoyed and learned from everything I ever did.
Ryman says back in those days, interns were unpaid.
So I worked for like lunch and, I worked in the office, production office, and I, answered phones and I took messages and I copied papers and I made coffee and I organized, I did all the menial things that you do when you start out in our business.
Ryman has been involved in a lot of productions.
I worked on things like North and IQ and A Legend of Bagger Vance and, sort of some of the larger sort of movies back in the 90s that were made or based in New York. And then, segue slightly, I took a couple years off. I have two children. I took a couple years off to have my kids. And then I came back in. I started kind of managing more at that point, going into more indie kind of movies. I did things like The Funeral, and I did It's Kind of a Funny Story, and I did sort of like lower budget projects to kind of build my way back up to be trusted with money. and then I started getting into stunt stuff, and I started doing second unit big stunt movies, like for I did something called Premium Rush, and I did second unit for Men in Black 3. I did second unit, which is all the stunt and action stuff, for Amazing Spider-Man 2. And then I started doing the John Wick's movie. I did John Wick 1 and John Wick 2. So it was all the stunt stuff.
Just before coming to Troy, Ryman was working with Marvel. She started in 2017, the year Marvel released Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Thor Ragnarok.
I came to Marvel Television in New York, and they had a whole system here where they were making 5 different shows. Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, Daredevil, and The Punisher.
If you respect yourself enough to take a book.
A manual that tells you what to do when your mother, who's been dead for 17 years, comes back and is a mass murderer.
I think that the people I kill need killing. That's what I think.
You left men hanging from meat hooks. It got off easy, in my opinion.
They were just doing one after the other after the other. They were always doing like 2 at once. It was quite the machine.
Ryman also worked on The Defenders as the production manager and went on to become the VP of production at Marvel, now part of Disney, for 2 years.
So I went from sort of managing one to like overseeing all 5 of them at once. So that was a good 2 years. And then they kind of dissolved the TV unit and it became part of the film unit and went to Bao Tole. But that was a great experience.
With Hollywood directors and producers being accused of sexual harassment in the workplace in recent years and the uprising of the Me Too movement, I ask Ryman if she ever felt uncomfortable at work because of a man's advances or comments.
A little bit. I've always been sort of headstrong as far as like not putting much stock in that, wearing what I want to wear, doing what I want to do, not worrying about looking feminine or trying to be like a man. I just kind of always had a sort of a strange sense of confidence. But yeah, of course you do butt up against it. You see it happen to other people. You try to, and once you get into management, you have the added sort of responsibility sometimes of getting into HR conversations with people and trying to make sure that doesn't happen on your set or how to solve it. And sure, there's been instances, especially on some of these larger, you know, sort of stunt-driven shows, there's a lot of men in the room. I mean, there were instances where there were 12 of us all making decisions and I was the only female. And that's fine, but it sometimes feels a little lopsided. And but honestly, you know, for whatever reason, I just never let it get to my head, and I was fortunate enough not to have any sort of bad interactions personally with anyone. And sort of, there's always a little bit of that underlying.
Ryman says the instances of inappropriate behavior she witnessed were less often on set and usually in the office.
There's someone who's making comments to someone else that might feel inappropriate, or yeah, there are, in a couple of instances there were older men and younger women, and there were comments made to people that the younger women didn't feel comfortable with, and how you delicately go in there and try to stop that from happening, and educating, honestly, people who have maybe grown up in a time where these things weren't as something that you talked about as much or tried to solve. It was just like, oh, that's just, you know, whoever doing whatever they do, you know. And now there's a lot more consciousness, thankfully, as a mother of two young ladies, who, you know, that's just not acceptable. And so those conversations aren't enjoyable, but I think they're important.
Ryman says the industry is improving. There are more women in the room now.
When I first started, I would say the women who had any sort of sense of power had devoted their lives to it, didn't have families, like couldn't. I think there's been a lot of shift over the past 20, 30 years of like a little more equality with what the expectations are of men and women.
Ryman says when she educates crew members, they take it seriously.
When someone of a position of power and employment comes to you and tells you your behavior has been noticed and is not appropriate, and this can affect whether or not you continue to work with us or what our opinion is of you, and, you know, that you need to work on this, people take it seriously.
Now, if you're like me and have no idea how a film set is laid out, Ryman breaks it down.
The first person you probably run into is a production assistant with a walkie and looking very worried, and we'll be doing what they call a lockup. It is basically the job to keep people who aren't on the show sort of out of the shot, away from the drama, you know, safe and away from the project, trying to control the perimeter. There's a lot of people. Then on the inside, the very core, right around camera, right around the actors, is going to be the director, is going to be sometimes the producer, it'll be the ADs, the assistant directors, who are really sort of keeping the cadence of the day going and sort of calling the shots and, you know, moving on from one shot to the other, surrounded by technicians who are cameramen, who are video men, who are sound men, who are recording all of this. And then the sort of middle layer of all of that is your grips, electrics. It's all the people who are controlling the light and moving the lights around and sort of making each shot beautiful. So there's a sort of a flurry of activity in between setups where everybody's scrambling around. And then while we're shooting, it's dead silent, we're recording, nobody's moving, we're all just waiting for the next thing. So there's a very sort of ebb and flow to a film set.
Of all those positions, Ryman says not many are filled by women.
It's getting better. I would say our camera department on our show has 30% women, whereas when I first started in this business, it was rare. To have anyone really honestly in something like the camera department or the grip department. In the grip department, if you don't know, basically lifts all the heavy stuff. And so, you know, traditionally that's been more of a male role. Electricians, we probably have maybe, I don't know, 15 to 20% women in those departments on our show. That's sort of indicative of the business in general. The ceiling is being broken. Things are happening, but it's still not where it should be.
Ryman says female producers are on the rise, but not everywhere.
I would say in New York, more so than someplace like LA. I don't know 100% why that is, but I feel like that's certainly gotten better too. Like, when I first started, there were a fair amount of, decent amount of women who were production managers who were like managing money but weren't like the boss, you know, and now that has definitely started to change. Like it was always the men who were the boss, who were the producers, they were typically male. But that is definitely changing.
Ryman says more women entered the scene in the early 2000s.
The tax incentive started and the stages started being built and there started being more and more shows in New York. There was just the demand was higher. And so it became more opportunity for people to take that next step and to fill roles they might not have been offered before. So it was really about volume of work. So it came opportunities for some women who might not have had it before because they needed capable people. And I think studios started realizing, oh, there they are.
Ryman has mainly worked in New York City for the past 20 years and lives on Long Island. She says most producers and crew are freelance, hired guns, she calls it. She says she's already planning on working on season 2 of The Gilded Age, though, because she says HBO is fantastic to work with. To find out how someone like Ryman ends up in Troy to film a major HBO series, I sat down with the film commissioner for neighboring Albany County, Deb Gedeke, who coordinated it.
Basically, I market our city, our destination, to production companies to come here and film. And then once they come here and they decide they want to film here, I connect them with all the services, the resources, and the community partners they would need to move forward with their project.
Gedeke says she's brought in film productions like Angelina Jolie's Salt and Will Ferrell's The Other Guys.
If I were a lion and you were a tuna, I would swim out in the middle of the ocean and freaking eat you.
Coming up against a full-grown 800-pound tuna with his 20 or 30 friends, you lose that battle. You lose that battle 9 times out of 10.
She says unlike other cities, production companies like filming here because there's a single point of contact for everything they might want. Get a key.
My special event individual that I work with the Albany Police Department, actually oversees the entire magnitude of the project. So whether there is a request for the Department of General Services in the city or a request for the Water Department, this gentleman that I work with, he makes that all happen. I know that in a lot of other cities, there isn't one point of contact. A good example of that is we're currently working with HBO White House Plumbers, and they came last Friday and they were talking to our police department and they were, well, we need this, we need the parking meter covered, we need the bus stop covered. And the Albany PD contact was like, I can take care of all of that. And the gentleman turned around to me and said, oh my gosh, this is so much easier. Usually we have to go to 20 different departments. I think that's a huge selling point for our destination. And also, we're very cost effective. They're all about time and money. And so we really adhere to our timeline and to whatever their budget is.
Ryman agrees.
The city's help with the streets and, you know, controlling and the police and everybody in this town were so accommodating that it made our lives so much easier. And it made it possible to do what we needed to do. So that was a huge, huge bonus. And I would say, when we tried to work with the local businesses and not shut them down, covered up their windows, but we tried to make sure that everybody knew they were still open. But I think ultimately it's the partnership with the government agencies that were really key in making it work as well as it did.
Ryman says the experience was so good, they want to come back for season 2.
I would say that is a very good bet.
According to the Association of Film Commissioners International, a TV series or film production can bring in $125,000 to $165,000 per day. New York State has also continued generous tax credits for film productions. Gedeke says The Gilded Age was in Troy for about 7 weeks and consumed over 5,000 sleeping room nights in Albany County alone.
So with this pandemic and all of our hotels being empty, you can imagine the boost that that's going to give.
Gedecky says it's not just the hospitality industry that gets a boost from film crews. She says productions hire locally for many positions on set with her encouragement and referrals.
PAs, production assistants, makeup, hair, lighting, key, grip. They want to try to hire as many locals as they can because they know, again, that that benefits the community and they want to come back.
Ryman says they took Gedecky's advice.
We hired a lot of sort of production assistants, obviously the background artists. We hired, security, all the people that we could hire and could find. I would love to have hired more sort of, union labor. There just isn't a huge group here existing, just because I don't know if there's year-round employment. But yeah, whenever we could, we did. I think we definitely tried to tap into as much local labor as we could.
Ryman says it felt like they booked up the whole town for a month.
Maybe 150 people in prep, another 150 on a regular crew. Plus on our big days, we probably bought another 100 people. And then the background, our bigger days with background artists was probably 200. So, it's 5, 6, 7, 750. I mean, on their big, big days, but a lot. A lot. And we were spread out over 10 different hotels between Troy and Albany. We maxed out all the hotels we could get in Troy. And then we had a couple of hotels, more like sort of long-term stay type hotels along the way. And then we had a couple of ones in Albany proper. But Albany's so close. It really 15 minutes. It's fine to shuttle back and forth.
Ryman says the background actors, extras for the Gilded Age, were almost all local.
So those were hundreds of people over the course of the month. So and what we did logistically, because of the costumes and fittings and how complicated it is to get people tailored exactly to their outfits, we use the same people for 2-3 different looks. So, you've got someone who's like someone on the street selling a newspaper one day, could be the next day in a top hat. So the numbers would have been higher if we used different people for all of that. But logistics and sanity sort of dictated that we used several people over and over again. But all like mostly local musicians, which was pretty fantastic. And then the local crew, I don't know, maybe 50.
Gedecky says she receives up to 50 filming inquiries a month, and she's worked with about 15 different companies now, including FX, the History Channel, Discovery Channel, and HBO. But she says when she's on the job, she isn't vying for favors with the stars.
I'm kind of like the worker bee. I stay behind the scenes. I don't ask for pictures or selfies of anybody. I really just want to make those things happen behind the scenes. I try to stay humble with it and really make them the top dog.
Gedecky says film is definitely a male-dominated industry.
A lot of times in the meetings that I'm at, I'm usually the only female. That's part of that meeting. Even a lot of the community departments that we work with, it's just part of the job. But I never let that bother me. I'm always treated as an equal. I think that if you go in, and I don't want to say prove yourself, but I think if people are respectful of what you do and you know that, and they know that you have their best interests, I think it eventually all works out.
Gedecky is 67. Growing up, she loved watching South Pacific and the Ten Commandments.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way. Get the picture?
But it wasn't her love of films that brought her to her current position. Mostly her love of people and making connections. Gedecky is also the convention services manager for Discover Albany. She's been in the event planning industry for 16 years. And Gedecky says if you look around on a film set, most likely the high power seats, director, producer, writer, are men. And on the few occasions a woman is in a seat of power, she says people assume they're an assistant or a makeup artist.
I've spoken to a couple of women and even seen it myself that are a producer or a director with a project, but they share with me when they go on set, a lot of times people think they're the PAs or the people that are there to get coffee. And I'm hoping that perception will change.
Gedeke says the deck may be stacked against women, but we just have to continue to prove ourselves.
I also think it's important to promote and uplift women in general as a woman. Nothing drives me crazier than to see women be catty with each other. Oh my gosh, there's enough of that going on in the world. We don't need to do it to each other. So yes, we need to be supportive of each other.
According to San Diego State University's Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film, in 1998, 24% of working producers were women. In 2019, that number had only increased to 27%. In 1998, only 4% of directors were women, and in 2019, that only inched up to 13%. But there is some hope. In the top 100 grossing films of 2020, 16% had female directors, up from only 4% in 2018. Growing up, I would watch the behind-the-scenes director's commentary of all my favorite films, and I don't remember ever seeing one with a woman doing the talking. I honestly assumed that women, if they were pretty and went to lots of auditions, might get to end up in front of the camera. I wish it had been more obvious that if she works hard, is organized, and knows how to lead, she can end up behind it.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
Thanks for joining us for this week's 51%. Thanks to our story editor, Ian Pickus. Thanks to Tina Rennick and Liz Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Lolita by Albany-based artist Girl Blue. 51% is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this episode again or share it with your friends, sign up for our podcast or visit WAMC.org. And don't forget, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at 51% Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Orchard. Until next week, remember, the future is fearless.